Welcome to It's All Politics from NPR News. I'm Ron Elving.
And I'm Ken Rudin in Ocean City, Maryland.
Ocean City. Ken, yes. What is the big political development in Ocean City?
Well, I'm walking up and down the beach and trying to talk to people about Sonia Sotomayor, and nobody wants to talk to me about anything.
All right, Sonia Sotomayor, big story. We're going to talk about her in just a moment. But first, we have to talk about the story everybody's talking about. Ken, how about that? Bill Clinton, is he back or what?
Well, apparently we do have a Secretary of State, and that's, who's Secretary of State?
That would be Hillary Clinton.
Oh, Hillary Clinton. Yeah. Well, it was interesting because Bill Clinton, it reminded me of 1983 when Jesse Jackson did his own peace mission, went to Syria, rescued Lieutenant Robert Goodman, who was shot down over Lebanon.
I remember we had a lot of trouble getting Jesse Jackson to talk about that later on the presidential campaign.
And, you know, the State Department was angry. A lot of Jackson's fellow Democrats.
Freelance diplomacy.
Grandstanding.
Absolutely.
And yet it was successful. The difference this time, of course, is because the Obama administration and Bill Clinton is in the same party. They may not be on the same page. And, of course, there were Republicans who said that you're legitimizing Kim Jong, who apparently is ill. I'm sorry for that one. So there's good news and bad news. Good news, we got the two journalists out. The bad news is that Kim Jong-il suddenly is legitimate.
That would be the bad news in the sense that most people would like to see North Korea isolated until they are willing to participate in either the six-party talks or some other kind of negotiations. That would lead to the restraint of their apparent nuclear ambitions. So anything that we do that makes them look like they're reasonable guys is probably not a very good idea. On the other hand, all of America watched the tearful reunion of the two women journalists and their families. Cute little girl. What are you going to do? This plays as a huge plus.
What I thought was also, it came at a time when Hillary Clinton was making a much ballyhooed trip to Africa, to Kenya, and she's completely wiped off the front pages.
In a sense, a lot of the things that have been going on in the last couple, 3 weeks involving Hillary with the North Koreans and some of the other things that she's been involved in appear now to have been something of a smokescreen for the backdoor negotiations that were going on to try to obtain the release of these two American journalists. But at this point, it's not clear this is going to change our relationship with the North Koreans for better or for ill. And I think I'm getting a little dizzy. We've been on foreign policy here for several minutes. It's not really our home turf, is it?
No, it's not. I can see Pyongyang from my kitchen window from Ocean City.
All right, well, here's the other question. Can you see more than 8 votes among Republicans for Sonia Sotomayor's nomination to the United States Supreme Court?
No, it looks like 8 may be the magic number. Obviously, Kit Bond and Judd Gregg are numbers 7 and 8. And, of course, if the other 32 Republicans vote against Sonia Sotomayor, then she becomes the Supreme Court nominee who's confirmed with the 4th most negative votes. Did you know that? Because Clarence Thomas had 48 no votes. Samuel Alito had 42. William Rehnquist, when he was confirmed for Chief Justice, had 33 negative votes. So if she gets 32 negative votes, she'll be the number 4 in the all-time Supreme Court hit list.
Well, and what's interesting about that is that this is the first one of the 4 that you just mentioned who is a Democratic nominee. All those others you mentioned were all Republican nominees. This is the first time we've seen a majority of Republicans line up against a Democratic nominee to the Supreme Court, is it not?
It is. That's absolutely true. And I think there are so many theories out there. Part of it is that a lot of Republicans are resented the fact that, look, you know, we voted for Breyer, we voted for Ruth Bader Ginsburg, and with no problems. And yet the Democrats tried to filibuster Alito. 22, half the Democratic caucus voted against John Roberts. So this is, you know, this is not fair.
Well, and a majority voted against Alito, including Barack Obama as a first-term senator,
who tried to filibuster the nomination.
But here's my real question. It doesn't seem to me sufficient to say that they're paying back the Democrats deservedly for having rebelled against Republican nominees. I mean, it seems to me there are more things going on here, even though the payback obviously is a justification for them. I think they're opposing her for a number of things. One of them is a perceived hostility to Second Amendment rights. In other words, that she isn't a gun rights supporter.
Right.
And the NRA, for the first time in its history, is scoring a Supreme Court nomination vote as an important vote to the National Rifle Association. So that's having an effect. I was noticing that of all the votes for her, the 8 we know about, the westernmost of those votes is Missouri. which is right on the Mississippi River. Apart from that, all of them are east of the Mississippi River, and it's in the west that the NRA is strongest. And there are other factors at work here, too. I think the fascination with the Wise Latina remark, combined with her decision in the New Haven case, has made her a kind of poster child for the idea of reverse discrimination and for the idea that white males are on the decline in terms of their influence in the country, and that's influencing some of these Republicans as well.
That's true, but when you think of John McCain voting no, John McCain has always been a lone wolf, his own person. I don't think he's knuckling under because of any kind of fear of retribution from the NRA or from conservatives, because if that were the case, he would have shaped up a long, long time ago.
Well, but on the other hand, Ken, why then is he voting against somebody? His best friend in the Senate is Lindsey Graham. Lindsey Graham is sticking his neck out here against many forces in his own party. And some of the retirees who don't have to worry about a primary in 2010, you know, Judd Gregg, Mel
Kit
Martinez,
Bond.
And possibly we should mention George Voinovich, who may be the ninth vote in her favor in the Senate if he decides to go that way, also a retiree. These seem to be the people who feel that they can go ahead and cast a vote in the more traditional support of the president mode. I was surprised personally by Lisa Murkowski. I thought that she would line up with the two women from Maine as supporters of abortion rights and vote for Sotomayor, but the gun rights and property rights issues apparently predominated in her thinking.
Well, and there's also an unhappiness in the Republican Party. I mean, the fact that so many Republicans are upset with Cash for Clunkers, and we can talk about that in a bit, which is a very, very popular and somewhat successful, of course, if they have the money for it, but a very successful program that seems to have won over a wide popular acclaim, and yet Republicans are complaining about it. There is an unhappiness in the Republican Party that, yes, we don't have alternatives, we don't have an alternative budget, we don't have an alternative way to deal with the bailouts, but it just seems like there's an inability on the Republican Party to express their unhappiness with the way things are going, other than just voting no. I mean, how do you
vote against? Voting no and also organizing, I would not say manufacturing, but I would say organizing, a lot of the anger and uncertainty and anxiety that there is in the country right now about the economy, which would include the Cash for Clunkers energy, if you will, and a lot of the fear about the health care plan that's being debated in Washington may or may not happen, some of the hostility to the energy bill that was passed in the House earlier this year. All of those things are producing in a big chunk of the American population, don't know exactly how big it is, but a substantial chunk of the American population, a lot of negative feelings, which are being organized and orchestrated not only by the Republican Party, but by religious groups, by various other conservative activist groups to turn out at these town halls and try to disrupt them and try to hold congressmen and senators accountable.
And some of it is making an effect. I mean, if we saw that like a month ago or so that President Obama's numbers were in the 60 to 65 range and now they're in the 50 to 55 range, that's a pretty steep decline, and Republicans are hoping to benefit from it.
We've seen a change in the number of people saying the country's going in the right direction as opposed to the wrong track. But the number is still a negative number. We still have far more people thinking the country is on the wrong track. And because the Democrats are so completely in charge of the mechanism in Washington, there are a lot of signs that it's going to be a rough midterm election for Barack Obama and the Democrats. In fact, they're going to have a rough fall in 2009. But I do want to mention a couple of other things that are happening. They're appropriating the other $2 billion to keep Cash for Clunkers going. That's a controversial program. People are flocking to get the $4,500, of course. But there's not much consensus about whether that does any long-term economic good, except maybe makes people feel better in the auto industry for a few weeks. And then we have one more spectacle of the fact of bipartisan corruption in the country, and a Democrat in this case taking a very hard fall in a U.S. district court in Northern Virginia this week.
We're talking about former Congressman Bill Jefferson of Louisiana, who was defeated for re-election in 2008 because he was under indictment. If you listened at all to his defense lawyer's argument that he basically whatever he was doing on behalf of businessmen and African business interests was separate from his role as a congressman, which seemed like how in the world you separate that?
He's a corrupt businessman, not a corrupt congressman.
But one more thing about the Sotomayor nomination. At least two Democratic senators, Senators Kennedy and Byrd, may not be able to vote for the nomination when it comes up for the vote. So we'll have the 58 plus the maybe 8 9 Republicans.
Yeah, 56 or 66 or 67 total is now looking like the number. It's a little south of the 70 that we'd been talking about because of the two missing Democrats and possibly a little less Republican support.
Now, while we're spending so much time talking about the Republicans who are unhappy with the Cash for Clunkers, with the Sotomayor nomination, we should also point out there is some fissure among Democrats as well, between the Blue Dog Democrats, the fiscally conservative Democrats, and the progressive Democrats also, especially on the health care negotiations. So not all the Democrats are happy either, even though, ostensibly, if you look at the list, you know, they have a Democratic president and complete Democratic domination of the House and Senate.
Yes, but if you take away the 50-some-odd blue dogs that you're talking about, the more moderate to conservative Democrats, or if you take away the roughly equivalent number of districts that elected a Democrat in 2008 but also voted for John McCain the same day, if you take away that group of districts, the Democrats don't have a majority. There are two Democratic parties, essentially, one in the middle, one on the left, and then there's one Republican Party almost entirely on the right with maybe just two or three members, a little scattering of members in the middle.
And it seems to be two Democratic parties in the state of Pennsylvania because we do have Arlen Specter, who is now a Democrat. He may have always been a Democrat, or he may have always been a Republican acting as a Democrat, or he may have always been Arlen Specter. But the point is that his long-rumored opposition in the 2010 primary has come to pass this week. Joe Sestak, the two-term Democratic congressman running from Arlen Specter's left, announced his challenge to Specter in next year's primary. And Sestak is not hurting for money. He has over $4 million in the bank, and he's appealing to a lot of Democrats who, even though Arlen Specter used to make Republicans tear out their hair over some of the things he would pull, not every liberal Democrat loved Arlen Specter. Just Anita Hill is a perfect example. There's a lot of resentment built up against Arlen Specter among Democrats over the years, and this is the first time they have a serious Democratic challenger.
That's one that will be watched very carefully throughout the next 18 months. The dynamic there is already awfully interesting on the Republican side. Pat Toomey, former congressman, does not appear to have serious opposition in the Pennsylvania Republican primary, and this week he came out for Sonia Sotomayor.
And so, I can't think of another more conservative Republican than Pat Toomey, but of course he doesn't have to prove his conservative bona fides, and I guess I don't know if that's part of it, but for him to vote for Sotomayor, to me, I thought was a very pragmatic move, but a surprising move because Toomey has never backed down from proving his conservative credentials.
Although I think it's also fair to say that he tends to be more of a Club for Growth type of economic dollar conservative, as opposed to a social issues conservative of the order of, say, Rick Santorum, the last Republican to have a Senate seat in Pennsylvania. All right, we have a very interesting November 2009 for Republicans, where they have a very strong shot of picking up both the governorships that are at stake each 4-year cycle, 1 year after the presidential election. That's New Jersey each 4 years and Virginia each 4 years. And this year is looking very good for Republicans in both.
Especially in New Jersey. Now, we always said that, look, John...
And that's such a blue state. I mean, that's become one of the easiest states for Democrats to win.
And John Corzine has, you know, multi-millions of dollars at his disposal, and he has not shown any hesitancy in spending that money in the past. He spent over $100 million in his Senate and gubernatorial campaigns. Remember, he was elected to the Senate, and then in the middle of his term, decided to run for governor. But he, being a former Goldman Sachs executive, which is not the kind of words you want to say during this time of economic uncertainty.
Not a big credential.
And he's not a well-liked guy. And, of course, you have this spectacle of a couple of weeks ago where 44 politicians and rabbis were arrested in an anti-corruption sting in New Jersey, some of them pretty close to Corzine, which is perfect news for the Republican candidate, Chris Christie.
Yes, and Chris Christie is continuing to maintain a double-digit lead in the polls that looks like it's pretty likely to hold up. The closer race is the one in Virginia, which is normally, or has been historically thought of as being a much more conservative state than New Jersey, but which has lately been trending from red to blue. But the Democratic nominee for this fall is a rural legislator, not terribly well-known, named Cree Deeds, and who is a surprise winner in a three-way primary. And this week, President Barack Obama is going into Virginia to help Cree Deeds, to lead a rally for him, to raise money for him. And the question is that a kiss of death in Virginia in 2009?
Well, of course, Barack Obama did carry Virginia in 2008, the first Democrat to do so for president since 1964. But as we've seen with Ronald Reagan in the 1980s, it's not easy to transfer your popularity. And we don't even know how much of a decline there's been in Obama's popularity in Virginia. But in 1986, when Ronald Reagan was out there, very popular president, trying to save control of the Senate by the Republicans, he failed miserably. It's hard to transfer it. With Barack Obama not on the ballot in Virginia, we don't know
what the
outcome.
That's the key. He gets identified with Cree Deeds. That doesn't necessarily help Cree Deeds among the kind of voters Deeds is trying to pursue, the more rural traditional Democratic votes or independent votes in Virginia. And the kind of people Barack does bring to the ballot box on an election where he's on the ballot probably aren't going to show up for Cree Deeds this fall.
You know, just a week or two ago, when Barack Obama was in New Jersey campaigning for Corzine, the numbers didn't change at all. In fact, Chris Christie kept that double-digit lead. But even if the Republicans win Virginia and win New Jersey, what message will they think they're receiving? Nationwide, the Republicans are still not extremely popular, to say the least. There is no Republican leader in Congress who is very popular, to say the least. And so you look at the 2009 election results and you look at what the Republicans are faced with going into 2010 and 2012, and you may get a very mixed message.
We'll talk more about that as the summer and the fall unfold. But Ken, that's it for this week's political podcast.
And the funny thing is, Ron, you can follow NPR's political coverage at npr.org/politics.
I'm Ron Elving.
And I'm Ken Rudin.
Join us again next week for It's All Politics from NPR.
Jersey Board of Health have sent the final warning. They're not buying our line. The dead nuns rise and shine. We must comply or face a fine. We've got to clean out the freezer, cause they know we're the ones who have refused to start defrosting those four blue nuns. The time has come to send them off to...